Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of OEM TV. I'm Eric Mills with Microsoft. I do Windows Server Marketing, and I'm joined today by Keith Mayer from Microsoft. How's it going, Keith?
Great, Eric. Thanks for having me on the show again today.
You're welcome. Well, as you know, you're such a popular guy, and you're one of these guys that knows so much about Windows Server 2016. We have you on as much as we can. But for those people that don't know Keith Mayer, can you just tell us a little bit more about what you do at Microsoft?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a principal technical architect on our Microsoft DX team, our developer experiences team. So my focus is working with large ISVs, independent software vendors that are building software on our platform to help them design, architect, and deliver their solutions on Windows Server or Hyper-V or Azure Cloud Platform as their platform of choice.
Okay, good. Awesome. All right, well, you're full of knowledge, so let's get to today's topic, which is Microsoft Internet Information Server, IIS. We have a new version of IIS in Windows Server 2016. So, this is the application you would use if you're a web developer and you need to provide your application to the world. IIS is the platform to do that. So Keith, what's new in IIS 10 with Windows Server 2016?
Yeah, that's a great question. And as you mentioned, IIS has been around for ages in many different releases prior to Server 2016 of the Windows Server operating system. And it's been heavily used by organizations for both intranet applications delivered to their employees as well as web-based internet applications. And, with Windows Server 2016, IIS version 10, has extended itself in a few key areas. One is from a performance standpoint. IIS 10 now introduces support for HTTP2, which is sort of a rework of the HTTP semantic stack that's been typically used to deliver web-based applications. A lot of browsers support HTTP2 natively, and now with IIS 10, Windows Server supports HTTP2 as well. And it's an important addition. It's an important advancement over HTTP 1.1, the prior most common release of HTTP, in a few different ways. From a performance standpoint, HTTP2 has the ability to multiplex connections, multiplex sessions over a common connection. And that's important when you think about common web pages that when they're loading, they may have, it's not just one web page document, it's a whole slew of linked assets on that document from CSS to include files to graphics images and whatnot. And if every one of those is a round trip connection establishment, pull down the file or resource, and then close the connection, that can add a considerable amount of latency to the user's experience in interacting with that web page. What HTTP2 does is it leverages a single connection, so you're opening the connection and then multiplexing in parallel all of the assets that are linked to that page that's being retrieved, and then the connection closes. So the result of rendering that page from an end user's perspective is dramatically faster, dramatically more responsive. And the cool thing is that largely to take advantage of that feature, web developers don't really have to redevelop their app, right? It's all handled at the HTTP stack level. So they can take an existing app, move it over to IIS 10, and start seeing more responsiveness for their end users right out of the gate from any browser, any common browser that supports HTTP2. So that's a really big improvement from a performance standpoint.
Okay, that's really cool, Keith. Let me just make sure I understand it. So with HTTP 1.1, when a web browser connects to the web server and is pulling down that web page is made up of HTML plus JavaScript and CSS and images and other include files, as you mentioned. With 1.1, it's pulling those things one at a time. Is that right?
Serially, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so with HTTP 2, it can pull them with one connection. It can pull them in parallel at the same time. That should make a big difference in performance.
Yeah, definitely. A huge, huge difference for both existing applications as well as new applications.
Right.
And in addition, some of the other advances with HTTP2 that also can help to improve performance, one of those areas is header compression. HTTP 1.1 has offered data compression as part of the HTTP stack for quite a while, but headers have not been compressed in, you know, prior to HTTP2. And, you know, sometimes with web applications, when you think about cookies and authorization headers and all kinds of stuff that are sitting up in the header area of a web request and response, compressing that can also help to improve the responsiveness and how quickly that content can get delivered down to the end user.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know with ASP.NET, they put a ton of information in the header that's passed back and forth. So compressing that should definitely be a noticeable difference.
Yep, definitely. And the last area that makes a big can make a big performance difference in HTTP2 is a technology called server push, where when a user requests a particular asset from the web server, with server push, what it can do, the web server can kind of predictively say, well, if you're requesting this, I'm guessing that you're pretty soon going to be requesting these dependent resources as well. And rather than waiting for the browser to actually issue a set of GET requests, it'll just push those requests to the browser. Now, 1.1 did something similar with inlining. But one of the challenges with inlining, using that with 1.1, is it was pushed to the browser in pretty much a non-cacheable way. And so anything the web browser was trying to do in terms of optimizing its local browser cache for improving performance further couldn't be leveraged. And so as a result, a lot of people kind of strayed away from that. Whereas server push in HTTP2 is pushing those resources in a way that's compatible with the browser cache.
Okay. Nice. That makes a lot of sense. So, you know, also on Windows Server 2016, as you know, we've got Nano Server, we've got containers, we have a lot of new technologies. Is IIS 10 going to be compatible with these?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's been a big focus in making IIS one of the key workloads for both Nano Server and containers in general, Windows Server containers in general, because applications are so prevalent on IIS, and it's such a great candidate. You know, but when you think about an internet-facing application, oftentimes security and hardening of that platform that the web application is on becomes really important for an organization. And by delivering that on Nano Server, you already have an ultra-small, thin footprint of the OS. So any hardening requirements are further optimized by just having that super small footprint. You don't have that larger footprint of a general OS to worry about. And containers are really useful for making web applications ultra-portable. And those web applications could be .NET applications, they could be open source stack applications like Tomcat or PHP or Perl or Java being delivered on IIS. But by containerizing them, it gives developers the ability to make those applications into a portable deployment model so that, you know, they might have some applications in an organization today that they keep on-prem running on Windows Server 2016, and it might be due to regulatory or data sovereignty requirements or privacy requirements of the data that particular application is handling. But then there may be other cases where other applications or through that life cycle of that application may be a good candidate for moving to a cloud provider like the Azure platform. By containerizing that application, it just makes it that much more portable. So you develop once and you can literally deploy anywhere, whether it's on-prem in Windows Server 2016 or up in the Azure cloud on Windows Server 2016 or in some of our other container options that exist for as more of a platform as a service offering on the Azure cloud.
Great. I don't know if you know it, Keith, but you're touching on a lot of really good stuff. I want to dig into a few of these comments a little bit. So,
sure.
You know, with Nano Server, which as you mentioned is the smallest kernel of Windows Server with just the necessary bits of the operating system that are really required that you can add on to. Very secure, hardened, very tiny and efficient, a great candidate for IIS to go into. And then with containers being that ultra portable, you know, semi-isolated environment to install your applications, which of those is going to be best for installing IIS? Because with Nano Server, I could put Nano Server in a virtual machine and then run IIS my application on that. Or with containers, I could put IIS and the app in a container to be deployed on a server. Which of those is best, or is there another third situation that I didn't mention that's best?
Yeah, or it could be both together, because NanoServer could be a container host as well that has containers running on top of it. Sure. And so a lot of the decision process of, you know, is should it be containers on a full release of the Windows Server OS or on Server Core, or should it be leveraging NanoServer, is going to be based on, for IIS, is going to be based on the application programming stack that the web developer is writing to. You know, NanoServer is great for, you know, very small footprint web applications that are written for, say, like .NET Core, for instance, our version of .NET that supports Windows Server as well as Linux. But NanoServer itself doesn't have support for, because of its small footprint, doesn't have support for some of the more robust full features of the full ASP.NET stack. So if it's an existing application that's been written for the full ASP.NET stack, you can certainly containerize that with, you know, on top of either Windows Server Core or the full Windows Server with GUI operating system with Server 2016. If it's a net new application, though, our recommendation is generally to target it for NanoServer. And then whether you deploy it as a virtual machine or as a container, we see a lot of people going the container route, mm-hmm. but whichever option you choose, that application will work fine. Part of the value that NanoServer brings, again, with that small footprint, in addition to security and hardening, is ultra density, right? So if you're in an environment where you have lots of web applications running on hardware and you're using Nano and containerizing it, you're going to be able to squeeze a lot more web apps into the same hardware footprint than you could if you were using full Windows Server 2016 as the underlying OS.
Nice. Okay, so lots of improvements here with the new options for deploying IIS. You did mention open source a little bit there, and you know, I think there's a common misconception out there that IIS is only for .NET, and if you're not running .NET, you should use something else. But you know, you mentioned open source. You know, what kind of what open source languages and stacks will run on IIS?
Oh yeah, it's open source is broadly supported by IIS as a web platform, and we see lots of customers that deploy IIS as their standard web server platform, and then within it deploy a mixture of .NET applications and open source applications because they may have different development teams, and some of the development teams may be more comfortable with one platform versus another. But in terms of open source, common open source platforms, you know, Node.js is real common for deploying on IIS. Tomcat as a sort of a servlet engine, Java servlet engine is really common. PHP certainly, pretty much all of the common open source stacks that developers may be writing to are either already integrated with IIS or have a way of being supported under the IIS umbrella.
Nice. Okay, makes sense. And then the other thing that people want to know about when they're deploying an application is, should I deploy this in an on-prem web server or in a cloud web server? And you know, with IIS 10 and the other improvements that are happening in the cloud, how would you guide people to think about that decision?
Yeah, I would. That's a great question. So I would think about first when you're deploying your application, plan for portability. Because even if today you have some organizational requirements that are requiring you to deploy on-prem on Server 2016, as your organization moves forward and new requirements are defined or revised, chances are in the future you may be deploying to a cloud or a hosted platform to reduce some of your data center costs. So plan your application portably. And what I mean by that is, as you're thinking about building your IIS application, think about encapsulating that application into its own virtual directory, have everything be bin deployable into that web application, and try not to focus on installing third-party tools or third-party components globally at the server operating system level, because that's going to start breaking some of that portability and limit how well you can deploy to cloud platforms, right, from that standpoint. So think about it as, you know, even if you're deploying your application on-prem today, build your application as though you were targeting a cloud provider. And then that way, by building it to target a cloud provider, you're guaranteed that that application is going to work well when it's deployed on-prem, as well as in the cloud going forward without having to do a significant amount of refactoring of the application. Right. So that's one aspect. And then another aspect of that is, you know, think about leveraging some of the technologies that we've talked about, like containers and NanoServer, to be able to gain some of that cloud-inspired optimization even when you're deploying locally today, so that you have the benefit of cloud design in your application and that portability. And then whether you're deploying to the public cloud down the road or not, you're able to get some immediate value out of this with Server 2016, even in an on-prem environment. Yeah. The other aspect, though, becomes a management aspect, right? Because a lot of organizations, they'll have IIS-based web applications, some that are running on-prem, some that are running in the cloud, some that maybe are still running on Server 2008 R2 or 2012 and haven't been moved to 2016 yet. Some that are running on 2016, some that are perhaps running on Nano or in containers. And so there's this disparate landscape of various web applications that many organizations have acquired over the years, right?
Right.
On various versions of Windows Server, various versions of IIS, various locations they're deployed to, cloud versus on-prem. And so one of the other key focuses in IIS 10 has been to deliver a new management framework that provides the ability to consistently manage across all of those options. And part of that is a new REST API. So a lot of people that are familiar with IIS in the past, you're used to MMCs,
right?
Microsoft Management Consoles and PowerShell commandlets and whatnot. And one of the key areas that's being introduced with IIS 10 is the ability to provide a distributed REST API that can support 2008 R2 all the way up to Server 2016, so that you have a consistent management layer. And then from a development standpoint, developers can take advantage of that REST API for continuous integration, continuous deployment of their web apps. From an IT pro standpoint, IT pros have a new web-based GUI that can be used to connect in to all of these various web servers, 2008 R2 all the way up to 2016, Nano, full server, server core, in the cloud or on-prem, and be able to consistently manage those side by side. So ongoing management is much more streamlined as well with Server 2016.
Nice. All right, you're dropping knowledge bombs as usual, Keith. I appreciate it. So I really appreciate your long-term view of the application. I think too many of us may think short-term and may think, oh, I need to write this app so that it's going to be awesome in the cloud, or I'm going to write this app to be awesome on-prem. And rewriting an app is often hard, but yeah, if you build it with flexibility in mind so that you have the ability to move it on-prem or move it in cloud, that really is going to set you and your company up for success long term. And a lot of times these applications live for a long time. So having that flexibility to move it around through your hybrid cloud infrastructure is really, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's what I see as one of the key differences and what sets us apart from other cloud providers as well, is that we've got this rich, deep experience in enterprise, small and medium business environments, as well as running our own cloud services, right? And so we're able to bring all of that together to provide that long-term cohesive vision around hybrid cloud. So that with Server 2016, we've baked a lot into Server 2016 that's come from our key learnings around running our own cloud services and running the Azure platform, so that customers, even if you're deploying on-prem today, can begin leveraging those advantages. And as you said, when you're designing new applications, can take advantage of some of that cloud inspiration and the design of your new applications to ensure longevity of that application as your organization begins plotting their own path that makes sense for your organization's timelines to other avenues that may involve public cloud or hosted cloud offerings.
Sure. Makes sense. All right, Keith, I think we've almost covered it here. Is there anything else that you want to make sure that people know about IIS 10 before we wrap?
Yeah, to learn more, we've talked about IIS 10 a lot of the new features. To learn more about those new features, best place to go is our official IIS website, iis.net. And if you do a search on that website for what's new in IIS 10, you'll get more detailed information about all the areas that we've talked about.
All right, cool. iis.net. Go there, check it out. All right, thanks, Keith. You're a wealth of knowledge, as usual. This has been a great episode. All you viewers out there, be sure to leave a comment down below if you have a question or you want to thank Keith for his knowledge bombs that he's delivering here. But that's it for me, Eric Mills. That's it for Keith Mayer. We will see you next time on OEM TV.